Just for the record, I'm Sue Svensson.
Bobby Olson.
Cindy Frankie.
Pat Bitches.
Jackie Marsden.
Lynn Parker.
Holly Glosser.
Paul Scarpelli.
And Lisa Fader.
Okay. And there are no more minutes here, so we do not have a public forum. So let's hear from Paul about the new dispatcher.
So I might actually kind of expand upon that. We went through, some of you may know, a big contraction of staffing about 5-6 years ago, mm-hmm. and have never really recovered. During that time, shortly after that time, we had a gal that we let go that was in the dispatch position, and we got back another gal that we had furloughed not that much prior. And so she has now taken a job in a different capacity, still within community development, down in the permit center. So it opened up an opportunity for us to hire a new dispatcher. And we had some good applicants, and we had two very strong applicants. We wound up going with a gal that had previous 911 call center experience, and she's been with us for 2 months now, and she's really, really great. She's only had one customer yell at her so far, but it's early and it's winter.
Right.
But she's just been great. And talking with staff aside, individually, they all just have rave reviews. So I think we swung for the fences and did a home run. So that's great. I'm going to roll that into the statistics side of things. I don't know if you saw. And remember with me, I try to always just look at the end of the quarter. So probably about the sixth page in, it will say the month of December 2015. And if you just have your eye wander all the way over to the far right, there's an awful lot of negative signs over there. Which is good in some respects that, you know, you could interpret this that there's just a whole lot better dogs and cats out there, or a whole lot better dog and cat owners out there. Some of that we believe has to do with, where the dispatcher was, prior to their taking a position somewhere else. So we're hoping that with the new dispatcher and their enthusiasm and following protocols and things like that, that maybe some of these values will improve just based upon that alone. We've also one more thing is going to happen here very soon. I think some of you also know that I wear three hats currently. I've asked to give one hat back, and they've accepted. So starting tomorrow, actually, they are going to conduct interviews for my finance job within community development. So I'm hoping with sometime in the month of February, I can relinquish that responsibility. That being said, then I'm also hoping that I can be a little bit more hands-on with the two I'm left with, code enforcement and animal control. And some of that will be to improve the consistency amongst the officers on how they track their work. I've had to just kind of go with a trust system for however many years now, 5 years now, and the place hasn't fallen apart. But that combined with the fact that we're down in our officers and down in our office staff, and the business in our mind has not diminished, we're running from event to event and not tracking it. And so here I am, you know, trying to raise my hand saying, we need more staff, and yet the statistics say, maybe you don't. The downward spiral continues because we're just trying to hold it all together. So we're working on improving there's actually a screen field in our database. It's called the activity field, and being more proactive on making sure that that's getting tracked properly. We also have, I sent around to you all some links to our new and improved website. So we're hoping that that's a double-edged sword. You know, it might help people get their answer and then not have to reach out to us, which is great. But then again, they're not reaching out to us, and that might not look so great statistically. And then, like I said, perhaps there's just better disposition with animals this last year. I kind of doubt it, but. So anyway, that was a long discussion about dispatcher position. Maybe we can come back to the statistics later and talk about them more completely. Can I just keep rolling here?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so most of you other than Lynn, who's new with us this evening, thank you for stepping up and being a part of this. Title 8 is the title inside Clark County Code and the City of Vancouver Code that handles animals issues, and you all have blessed, gosh, was it last summer, if not before that, some updates that we hope to take forward. The new county council is now in place, and we're hoping that probably in the February, March timeframe, their calendar will open up. They're doing an awful lot of housekeeping issues right now. Policies and procedures at their level, and they don't have a whole lot of window of opportunity to discuss code amendments currently. So it's not off the table, and it's coming very soon. And there's been no change from my staff on what we're looking for. And frankly, the seasoned three, I had one-on-one discussions with each of them, and they didn't seem to have any heartache. So I'm hoping that it's just a timing issue and we can get there. We met in December, but did we have a approved contract at that point?
No, definitely not.
So we have a new 3-year contract with a 2-year extension on the back end of it, so potential for a 5-year contract with the Humane Society. In conjunction with that, I did get budget approval for increases to our expenditure budget such that I could pay the bills. That was good. That was two. That was two very nice wins for us, and kind of a sigh of relief that, okay, mm-hmm. we can worry about the work for a period of time.
Yes.
The next thing is Community Cats. I know that, I hope that you all received in a early enough time frame that you had a chance to review the really great work that Jackie took. It appears as though a lot of time, and so thank you for putting it together. At some point we're going to move over here to the presentation, and we can let it go from there. I'm going to do a little ad hoc stuff here. Stephanie sent me this. Stephanie, if you remember, she's our equine livestock representative on this board. And so she sent me some statistics from the Clark County Executive Horse Council's Adopt a Horse program, and I thought they were compelling enough to share with you. So this goes back to 2007 when they had 5 horses brought into the foster horse program. It jumped up to 30 in 2008, 20 in 2009. We're edging into the recession there, and people are making choices in their lives that don't necessarily equate to beneficial living conditions for their animals. 16, 20, 15, it went back down to 7 in 2013, 11, and then 13 last year, for a total of 137 horses that they've fostered over that 9-year period of time. You're aware that the Humane Society doesn't have those sorts of services available to us, so this is just a beyond belief blessing for the county that this group of predominantly women have stepped up and taken on this for us. It's really phenomenal. So I'm just going to throw some more numbers at you for 2015. There are currently, they took in 13 horses for the year. There's 12 in foster, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's of that 13. It could be from prior years. The number of horses euthanized in 15 was 6. One due to painful lameness and acute anxiety. Second was poor prognosis per the vet. Third had a rotated coffin bone. One had a twisted gut, and one had a shattered shoulder. The total number of horses adopted in 2015, not that great of a number, only two. So there's a number that are still in foster. They made, or they brought in an income of just over 10 grand and spent just over 7 grand in expenses. So did I send out to you all the date that they have already slated for their dinner auction? Okay, I'll need to do that. It's in May. And it's at the, just right over here at Green Meadows.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm going to my house. Yeah.
Yeah. bring your checkbook and I'll get you all liquored up. How's that?
It's not going to be the same night as Walk for Animals.
Yeah, I was going to say what day in May do we know?
I'll tell you what. May 5th is the walk. It's the first.
The first council.
No, it's like the first.
Hold on,
Saturday.
I'll tell you. Yeah. The first Saturday in May. March, April, and May the 7th. May 7th is the walk. That's a Saturday.
Which is in the morning.
It's so in the morning, right. So it's a morning thing. Right. Yeah.
Do you know which day in May it is?
I think Sue's looking that up for us.
I'm trying to.
I don't know. I asked them to post it online, but I don't know if they've gotten around to it yet.
I need to text myself about it. So
yeah, I don't see a category here on their little website. Date. I think it's on the regular horse council website.
I have it on my work calendar, so let me see if I can't get there quickly.
What do we do with all these things?
I
know, right?
Used to cart around calendars.
Yeah. A big planner.
I've got my planner at home, and everything has to go in that because too many different computer things. And this is a dumb phone, so it doesn't remind me of those
things. So while my phone is thinking, or Sue's racing on the internet over there, just some statistics about animal control financially. We have a two-year budget, and we brought in 56% of expected revenues, or $759,000 this last year. So that's good. We're ahead there. And we have a two-year budget of $2.3 million on the expenditures. We spent almost exactly half, $1.15 million. So we're right doing what we're supposed to do. We're spending it and bringing in more than we said. So good job, Paul.
But does that mean they take the money away from you next year?
They don't. Okay, so another way to talk about that is we spent $1.15 million, mm-hmm. but we only brought in $7.59 million. So they're subsidizing
they're still
the difference.
Subsidizing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know what's going on here. I'll have a date for you before the end of the night. How's that for the adopt a horse?
Or email it to
you. Yeah. So should we just like go with the shelter stats and all that since we're all sitting here before we migrate over there?
Yep. So a couple of things. Speaking of the walk, May 7th, we did our team kickoff event last night. So last night was sort of the official like walk kickoff. And so you can go onto our website and sign up for the walk. Already you can sign up for your team, and we're expecting, or our goal this year is $190,000, which is about $30,000 more than we made last year, and an all-time high for us. So we're really excited. It's our 25th anniversary of the walk run, and so there's going to be a lot of fun this year. So,
And you're promising good weather, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. Weather.
Cool weather, yes. So we're tying up still 2015, but I brought some highlights to talk a little bit about where we ended the year. We had a really, really great year at the Humane Society, primarily in adoptions. We did 4,401 adoptions in 2015, which is an all-time high for us. And the really cool thing about it is that We adopted out 24% more adult cats than we did in the prior year, which is just absolutely unbelievable.
Okay, why?
I don't know. I'm trying to find that out.
Don't you have less kittens coming in?
Well, yes, we definitely have less kittens coming in. And on top of that, our kittens this year were adopted out from foster care. So we did what we call a pre-adoption. We also had, like, kitten adoption events, as opposed to having kittens available in our cattery. So a lot of the kittens were adopted straight from the website. And while they were still in foster care, so it was less stress on the kittens and less care in the shelter for them. And people who came to the shelter to visit saw adult cats for adoption. We did have a few kittens available, but it wasn't, you know, overwhelmed. Exactly. Mm-hmm. They were in that day and gone the same day. Mm-hmm. So I think that really helped with getting some exposure for the adult cats. We also had an adult cat promotion through most of the year where it was, I forget what it was called. It was called Wise Whiskers or something like that. But and we think that that helped a lot. But I think primarily it was the kitten foster program and having kittens adopted through foster care, because people who wanted kittens went online and found kittens and adopted them before they ever came back into the shelter. And so that just made things so much easier on a number of levels. So that was really, really nice to see that a lot of adult cats got adopted this year. We did adopt 1,900 adult dogs, 1,400 adult cats, 810 kittens, and 262 puppies. So, and then 13 rabbits. So a total of 4,401 adoptions this year. So we were very, excited because we've been doing a lot of work on promoting adoptions and promoting the Humane Society as a place to come to adopt. And so it's obviously paying off and people are starting to come to us more frequently, to check our website more frequently, and clearly it's paying off.
How many total cats, including kittens, did it go up from last year?
Yeah, it did. So if you recall, in 2015, we opened back up again for stray cats without an appointment. So anybody with a stray cat could walk in at any time. So we anticipated an increase in cats because for 2 years before that, at least during the summer, stray cats required an appointment. Unless, you know, obviously we took in several of them that weren't, but we tried to get people to make an appointment for stray cats. And so we did see a decrease in stray cat numbers over the last couple of years. And that was one of the reasons, not the sole reason, but one of the reasons. And so we did anticipate an increase this year, and we did see an increase. In total, stray cat intake was up by 10%. So we took in about 300 more cats in 2015 than we did in 2014.
My question was actually about adoption.
Oh.
You said that you had adopted out 24% more adult cats.
Yes.
But overall, how many cats?
Oh.
2014 versus 2015.
Hold on a second. Let me do the math.
I'm just wondering if that increase is only a shift.
No. Okay. It's not, because there were more kittens.
14%.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. So I got it. Overall, it was up 14%. So kittens were up by about 40 from last year, and adult cats were up by 300.
Okay.
So about 340 increase overall between adult cats and kittens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. We took in a total of 6,503 animals for live intake, which means not including euthanasia requests and DOAs. When you add in euthanasia requests and DOA, total animals that we handled was 7,370. That's about a 9% increase in live animal intake over 2014. Stray dog intake was down a smidgen. Those numbers stay pretty consistent, but they were down just a little bit. Stray cat intake was up about 10%. We did receive fewer kittens this year, which was kind of surprising because kind of anticipated we'd have more kittens being open without an appointment, but we actually took in fewer kittens. And we took in about 100 more puppies this year, but that was primarily through our transport program that we brought in puppies. The other interesting factor is that we allowed 71 kittens to be born in the shelter versus 15 from 2014. And that's primarily because we just allowed kittens to be born rather than spaying them, frankly, because we are able to adopt pretty much every kitten that comes to us now at this point. So throughout the kitten season, we would occasionally allow a kitten that was a cat that was pregnant to go into foster care and give birth as opposed to spaying her before giving birth. So we're sort of experimenting with that a little bit. Something I never thought I would do in my animal welfare career.
That's a tough one, yeah.
But things are changing, and so we change with the times. And if the demand is out there for kittens, then, you know, then we're going to meet it. At this point, we're able to handle and accommodate them and adopt them out. And so, you know, we're going to give it a try. So we'll see what happens.
So how does the, I should know this, but how does the spaying and neutering of kittens go? How do you handle that before they're adopted?
So what happens is the kittens will come in. Let's say somebody brings us a litter of kittens they found on their porch. And so we will vaccinate them and deworm them and give them a whole, you know, physical exam. Then they go out to foster care. We have a group of foster mentors that go and visit each of the foster homes and do revaccinations and weight checks and overall health checks and just kind of keeps an eye on the kittens and sees that they're okay. Yeah, so I know, right? So they don't ever come back into the shelter. Not even for weight checks or revacs or anything, which used to be, they used to have to bring them back into the shelter, and that exposes them to disease and it puts the burden on the foster parent. Now we have the mentors that go to their homes and do it there at their home. And then when they hit about 7 weeks, they go on to our, what we call our pre-adoption list. And so you can go onto our website and click on kittens, and you'll get a list of all the kittens that are about 7 weeks old. Mm-hmm. And then you email us and say, okay, I'm interested in seeing Goldie and, you know, Trudy. And we will then make arrangements for you to meet the foster home, either not at the foster parent's home, but usually we'll make arrangements to have them come to the shelter and do the, you know, the socialization aspect. And if they decide that that's what they want to adopt the kittens, then they pay at that point and process the entire adoption. And then we make an appointment for next Wednesday to have the kitten spayed. By that time, she'll have been 8 weeks old and 2 pounds, and then the foster parent brings the kittens in on that day, and the adopter comes to pick them up at 4 o'clock. And so
8 weeks, wow.
Yeah, 8 weeks, 2 pounds.
That's awesome. It's the only way to make
that. Yeah. I find it so early.
Couldn't imagine them getting to go home and then,
yeah,
you have to bring it back, not
no. No. No, we don't do that.
So are you still doing the low-cost spay and neuter program?
We are. We're still doing the spay and neuter program.
Why you're not getting as many kittens.
That's exactly why we're not getting as many kittens.
Has the intake of kittens, with the exception of the ones you're allowing, gone steadily down?
It has. And not just us. It's the entire Portland metro region.
Yeah.
So our statistics, you know, mirror what's going on regionally. So it's not just, you know, that we're doing it. It's happening in there. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's definitely making a difference. The, you know, intake of cats has just decreased so significantly over the past couple of years. And I keep thinking, some year we're going to kind of hit a stabilization point, and it doesn't seem to happen. We're getting fewer kittens. We did get more adult cats this year, but not anywhere close to what I thought we would get. I really thought we would just kind of open back up again and get, you know, 1,000 more cats, and we didn't. We did get a number of more cats, but not as many as I thought. So we'll see what happens. There are, as funny as this sounds, their OHS and cat adoption team are actually transporting in kittens from California.
Wow.
I know, because now we don't have enough kittens during certain times of the year. During kitten season, it's still not a problem, but that's, you know, becoming more common. So it'll be interesting to see what the trends do, you know, over the next couple of years. But we're starting to kind of turn the corner to, you know, what has been widely considered overpopulation, and that's not necessarily what we're seeing, you know, everywhere. Of course, there are still pockets of the, you know, community where there's a huge need for spay-neuter, and so it's a matter of, you know, targeting those areas and, you know, working with the low-income population to make sure that they have access to low-cost resources, so that we can maintain, you know, the level at, because if we don't continue to do it, it will just get out of control again.
Yeah.
So 52% of the stray dogs were redeemed, returned to owner. So 52% redemption rate for stray dogs, which I think is excellent. I wish it were higher, but it's better than a lot of areas that have about a 30% redemption rate.
How many of them were pit bulls?
Not very many.
Yeah.
Not very many. I mean, I don't have the statistics here, but we're just not seeing pit bulls very often. So,
not seeing them redeemed. You're still getting a lot of them, right?
We're still getting an average amount. We're not getting a lot of them.
That's good.
So, yeah.
How many of the strays, dogs or cats, are chipped?
10%.
Very small.
Still very small, which I don't understand, because everybody microchips now. It's considered commonplace.
Yeah.
And still, the
stray... You can't get an... It's almost anywhere that you go to get an app,
exactly,
they're going to
yeah.
give you the microchip.
And yet, the stray animals that we get in are not microchipped. So I don't understand that. I keep hoping we'll start to see more frequent. And the ones that we do get microchipped are not...
current
traceable.
Registration.
Yeah, current registration. So.
Boy, I nagged my clients about that. Like, does he have a microchip? Oh, yeah. Maybe you better contact him.
Yeah.
So if the owner redeems them and they're not licensed, you make them license them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make them chip them?
No.
I don't think you can force them to chip them.
Yeah,
no.
What do you
think?
Suggest it, I guess.
We do. We offer it. We suggest it. In fact, every stray animal that gets redeemed that's not chipped is recommended. But and we offer it actually for a very good price, but we can't force it. So the licensing we can enforce.
Right.
We can, you
right.
know, it's mandatory that they license, but it's not mandatory to microchip. So, you know, but at some point, you know, I would think we'll hit a tipping point where everybody's microchipping these days. I mean, it's a very common thing. So I keep hoping that we'll start to see that. That's true. Stray cats have a 3% redemption rate, so still, you know, problems with stray cats being redeemed, primarily because I don't believe the stray cats that we get in the shelter are actually owned cats. You know, some of them are.
She left 6 months after she disappeared.
Yeah, some of them are. You know,
yeah.
But the majority of them just aren't.
Before they moved, I had a cat that disappeared from the pet sitter's house. She was microchipped, but they were right by a greenway. And she was gone for 6 months, and I guess whoever had her got tired of her medical problems and pitched her over the fence and the shelter at the old place. And staff came out and found her in the breezeway between the two buildings in the morning and took her in and scanned her and went, oh my god, she's got a chip.
Yeah.
It was so cool. She's a great cat.
So our live release rate for dogs was 95.4% this year. And our live release rate for cats was 81.7%.
Wow,
so,
that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
really, really good. Our combined live release rate was 88.6% for both dogs and cats. So,
that's impressive.
Yeah, very. We did very well this year. So we're very happy with the outcomes. We did 1,230 public spay-neuter surgeries and 2,200 shelter surgeries, so a total of 3,400 spay-neuter surgeries performed. Length of stay for adult dogs was 10 days, which is actually down from 12 days in 2014. And length of stay for adult cats was 20 days, down from 22 days. So we're doing really, really well across the board. So,
do these reports go to the county council?
They do. Well, they go to the county. I don't think they... We do, like, an annual update where we, you know, go make a presentation and talk about, you know, our statistics every year, but... and we send statistical reports monthly, along with our invoice, to the county, so...
How many cats and dogs that are in the Columbian get adopted? Because they post
the,
those every
the
week.
Pet of the week?
Yeah.
Oh, all of them.
So that works.
Yeah, that works. Our website's been getting a lot of activity lately. It's been very helpful to have...
Everybody likes online shopping.
I know, right?
I find it very dangerous. Yeah. I try not to look at it.
Well, the funny thing is that, well, when we get puppies in, literally, people line up outside our door at 10 o'clock. You know, we don't open until noon, so people are lined up. We have a number system now that we give out people when they line up for puppies.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Well, where else can you get a spayed and wormed microchipped puppy for $100 or less?
Yeah. Not at our place. No.
Price is going up a bit.
$450 is the going rate.
Wow.
For puppies.
Really?
$450.
Wow.
So, and if you're getting it and they're lined up, I'm thinking that you might need to hire an auctioneer or something.
We talk about it frequently, but you know, we don't want to.
Wow.
It's not about the adoption revenue, although. Yes. Adoption revenue for puppies at $450 helps the adult dog and pay, you know, that sits there for 3 weeks.
How much is it for an adult dog?
An adult dog is $100, a senior is $50. So
somebody said $450 puppy, all the chewing, all the other.
There you go.
$100 mature.
Absolutely.
Well, I think people have to realize that they're not spending $450 for a puppy, per se. I mean, they're supporting something larger than
that. But I'm saying the adult dogs need homes better, more.
Yeah. Well, no, I know. I think that's a real important selling point to people. It's like getting your dog licensed. It's not about this little thing we put around our neck.
Right.
It's what you're supporting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's what I tell people. It's not just in case your dog gets lost, because sure, you can put a little ID tag with your phone number on it, but it's
supporting the community, and that is what
it is. Taking care of all these animals.
Right. Everyone who's a pet owner needs to be a part of that larger thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the only other thing that I wanted to talk about tonight was you all got our information about the feral cat task group that we're going to talk about. So that meeting is Wednesday, February 3rd at 4:30. My apologies to people who couldn't make it at that date. I tried so hard to get everybody a date that everybody could make it, and it just wasn't going to work. So the idea is that in that group we will talk about making recommendations to this group for potential code changes and a potential feral community cat program that, you know, we've kind of discussed in the past. So I encourage you all to join us for that. And then once we have some recommendations, we'll actually make a presentation to the big group. To this group here, and then kind of go from there as far as whether you want to make recommendations to the county council, and then that's another step. So,
okay.
That's it.
Everything for you.
That's
Paul, would you want to revisit statistics, and then we can go back up and have Jackie talk more about the community?
Well, I alluded to the fact that revenue is ahead of forecasts, and that just plays out with what you see on the licensing page, which is the second page of our statistics, where the county was up 3%, the city was break even. So we have an overall 2% increase in licensing, although I'm noticing the cats are down, cats are not up quite as much as dogs, which is...
Because we adopted more adult cats.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Do you know what the percentage of licensing of pets in Clark County is?
We have to estimate because we don't know how many are out there, but we use the American Veterinary Medicine Association, AVMA, standards, and so we're somewhere hovering around 30% for dogs, and we're somewhere around 9 to 10% for cats.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
very low.
Pretty low.
A lot of potential there.
A lot of missing money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that, again, that
convincing people that it where they're spending the money is on care of animals.
The larger good.
Because, yes, I don't put my tags on my cat.
Mm-hmm. My cat is an indoor cat. Why do I need
to? Well, I experimented with the cat collar on her. She opted out of our house. Did I mention we have four dogs? Anyway, so she was a house cat, but I can no longer entice her in. But I tried the cat collar, and 3 days in a row, came out without a cat collar. And I said, well, then no tag. Sitting on my desk.
Yeah,
but I think a lot of people think that way instead of thinking, mm-hmm. I need to do this because this is my contribution.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any way to link the microchip and the license number yet in the system?
Mm-mm.
The new system will have a field for that, and you could type it into a description field if we have it. Our problem is that we carry the universal scanners, and 80% of the time they're not chipped. Mm-hmm. Of the 20%, 80% are
not registered.
Bad data.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's somebody in California. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. It wasn't even their cat in the first place. Like, I just.
Right, but it's in your system, there's a cross-reference.
Right, mm-hmm. And that's what I'm thinking, is for like the cats that mm-hmm. you can't keep a collar on, if the microchip will prove that they are also licensed, that saves a little bit of hassle in the long run, too.
True.
And certainly if they end up at the emergency clinic or something mm-hmm. like that, it's helpful for them to know that.
One quick story. I'm not sure if it's just one of those ones that eats at me. So I process all the... I take care of all the coyote issues, and I take care of all of the service animal issues. So part of the process, I put people through. You cannot register for a service dog online. You have to send in the paperwork and basically a note from your doctor. I don't want to know what's wrong with you. I'm not allowed to know what's wrong with you. But I am allowed to ask, and I do want to know what the animal provides in a way of service. So get a request for a service animal license earlier this week. Note from the doctor, everything's the way it needs to be. So I pull up in our system to see whether or not we have any animals licensed at that house. Don't see any. So then I go over to our GIS system and I pull up the property information that the assessor puts together on all properties in Clark County, and it's like a $300,000+ house. Okay, because I think you've all heard me say this before, typically what the person is looking for is they're looking for a piece of paper from my department that says this is a service animal, and by having that piece of paper they can then go to their property manager and have two things happen. One is they are allowed to have animals in a unit where an animal in it may not be allowed, and two, they can bypass any sort of a pet deposit mm-hmm. that is required per the property manager. They can bypass both of those. Then they can also get into a restaurant or whatever else because mm-hmm. they
take
this piece of paper. Yeah. Well,
but that pet deposit one is a big one.
Yeah. So we don't. There's nowhere in anywhere other than in our database. There's a field that says service animal, senior discount, juvenile, adult. You know, it's that those categories.
So this is from the discount, basically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
they're not getting certified.
Yeah, there's no way that these, according to what either the ADA or Washington State regulations say, that these mm-hmm. are service animals. But I'm not in a position, and I'm not going
to make that determination.
Argue with them. So I get this woman on the phone, and sure enough, it was not about the money. But she was the property owner. It was like her name and her husband's name were on the title of the home. It was a $300,000+ home. They'd owned it like since 2002. So, you know, it didn't give any appearance that they were in any way in need of a discount.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the thing that eats at me that we're not losing a lot of revenue, but it's probably a couple $1,000s a year to this where it's just people that... You're not, and I've tried to explain it to her, I'm not giving you any sort of documentation. The tag is the same blue tag. There's no way that your next door neighbor or the mm-hmm. vet or anyone's going to know that this is a service animal. That's fine. Just go ahead and send it out to me. And I couldn't go there and say, you cheap person.
Well, I know somebody in the county with five dogs. Yeah. And they're living in a $500,000 house.
Yeah.
I had quite a conversation with him. And he said, why should I give the county my money?
So he just needs somebody to knock on his door and say,
yeah, he does. Yeah. He really does.
And he doesn't give them the money voluntarily. But, I mean, he doesn't. More money for fines.
Do they have children?
Not at home, no.
Do they have grandchildren?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So remind him that when his grandchild gets chewed up and an animal control officer has to come out to investigate and potentially mm-hmm. prosecute, that it's that money that his licensing pays
for.
Oh,
I had quite a conversation. Okay. But that is a mindset mm-hmm. in the county with people yep. to get well afford.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just tell them now, if you don't pay your $16 now, you're going to have a $250 fine later.
Yeah.
And that usually
But
gets
they don't
attention.
Usually get caught.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, unless you're going around the county checking tags.
Yeah.
They can't. They just don't have enough
people.
So,
no, they don't. There's no way to
go off and knock.
If they could do the canvassing, they could get the employee to do the
And the date is
May
21st.
May 21st.
If you want to announce that.
Okay.
But they don't. The county will not pay in advance for the employee to get the revenue in order to do it. They have to earn the revenue first before they get the employee.
Knock on my neighbor's door.
Speaking of revenues, the penalties collected, is there just a problem with collections? Because it looks like you're down on your penalties collected, but not but by more than you are down on your notices issued. So I didn't know if that's just a collections problem or a small margin of error. Your notices issued, you're down by 20%, but you're down by
37%. Yeah, there's probably a correlation directly with the set of data above. There's just not as many citations being written, and thus the collections aren't as good. We are running into a problem. Evidently, there was a federal law change in the civil penalty world, not the criminal penalty world, and we are going to have to rewrite the language on our citations because the way they are written currently is not in the form of a contract, and so they're not executable by a collection agency starting June 15th. So we're going through some steps with our prosecutor and our vendor, I think it's called Alliance One, on what the language needs to be, and then we've got to send stuff to press right away. So.
I just had an idea.
Yeah.
I know you're not allowed to use volunteers, but as Animal Control Advisory Board members, we might be able to do that. Is there a letter that could be composed to dear resident stating that if you have unlicensed dogs or cats in this household, you are liable for such and such a fine? Please submit your license application at blahblahblah.com. If you printed out all the addresses in the county that are under your jurisdiction on the label and then had somebody look up all the licensees and peel off those labels and we only sent it to the people who had animals that were not licensed, wouldn't that work as at least the initial knock on the door canvassing kind of thing and maybe get a little bit more cooperation? Especially if somebody donated funds for postage.
Or you could run a campaign like the Humane Society does, the National Humane
money.
Society.
That costs money.
I'm
thinking of,
full and knock and knock thing.
So there's a lot going on here. So I hope I shared with you 6-ish months ago it was a piece of paper and it was vibrant lime green.
Oh yeah,
and it was that size.
Yes.
And it had a cutesy little picture, QR code, and kind of a compelling reason to go here. So it went out in the property tax bills for the October payment cycle. There's another one coming up here in April. And we got no way of tracking it, but we in no way saw any sort of we saw nothing.
Nobody
because they don't.
Right.
Any inserts that come in.
So I'm a little reluctant to do that one again, even though I've got like 16 boxes of these things now. Because they gave me killer price. So I tried to work with the city of Vancouver because they have their own water system and their own water billing system, thinking, okay, that would be a little bit more personable. And they won't let me. It's a long story. They won't let me. So then the next thing that I'm now trying is my mother recently died. And so all of the – when you go to the post office and I had everything transferred to my house – they didn't really know why. It's just kind of this automatic thing. All of a sudden, you start getting this mail from the post office or from vendors who, you know, 10% off your next purchase at Home Depot
anytime you move.
You're welcome.
I have a friend who used to contract.
Okay, so I had one of my officers contact the Postal Service, like, okay, well, let's just shove these little green things in with people that are moving because they might not know what the laws are here locally. And that might be actually one that they open up and look at because it's got all these coupons in it. Okay, well, you have to be basically at the national level because these are only coupons that are from national retailers, basically. So Patrick's got some gal there that he's trying to figure out. Is there some way, please, that we could break it down to a zip code and run it for 3 months and just see what happens. So we're trying to do that. So I haven't really answered your question yet. Other than the expense side of it, I don't think it would be, under the penmanship of anyone other than my department. But if someone wanted to pay for it, heck yeah.
So what I'm thinking is something that's, if it's addressed to them personally, the owner of
yes.
the house.
Yes, and it's the only thing in the envelope, basically.
It's the only thing in the envelope, and it is a letter kind of in the I'm putting you on notice sort of tone without being really threatening or anything. But basically, if you have unlicensed animals, you are liable for these fines.
Right.
Contact the county, blah, blah, blah. It's going to get their attention a lot more than the little pretty flyer that you throw out because you don't need to deal with that.
So there's several ways that could be attacked, and you can take the database that we have and overlay it with the GIS database. So you could compare all the addresses that are out there, and what I'm getting at is you would only wind up with a list of non-pet owner households.
Right.
So you could do that. You had said...
non-pet licensed households.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. We don't know if there's a pet there or not.
Right.
Sorry. So you could narrow that list down fairly quickly. Then you could probably also look at demographics. There are certain socioeconomic groups that it's not worth your 40 cents to send it to that.
The apartment doesn't even allow pets, why send anything to
Yeah, so you could narrow it down further. So you could get a fairly robust but somewhat more specified data set. It would still be in the tens of thousands of addresses.
Right, which is why I'm thinking, maybe a couple of envelope stuffing parties with the board or something like that, get a couple bottles of wine and start stuffing envelopes and putting on the labels that you can get us.
Well, let me inquire as to the legality of that. I don't see.
Well, the only thing, price tag so that we know what.
And the only thing I would think about is the potential for negative consequences or negative perception. So just think it all the way through.
Right, and
before you just send it, and then now we've got 300,000 people. What in the heck are you doing sending me that, I don't even own a pet. So I'm just saying, you just have to think it all the way through. I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
It has to be worded like, if you have unlicensed
pets. But I would want to
had the county spend it through. On it, people would pay more attention.
But at the same time, the last time that there was a big deal about the increase in fines and that they were out there, yes, people were upset, and a whole lot more licenses were sold.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to kind of weigh that.
That's what I'm saying. Know that there's a potential out there for some negative consequences, but if those override the positives, then it's
fine. It would certainly need to pass the legal sniff test. Yeah. It would have to go through our PIO office. I think you all know what that is. And then it would probably even have to get the blessing of the county manager. So everybody in the higher echelon would know this is going out and have...
We can start saving our... What's the cost-benefit analysis? I mean, how many would you have to have?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many licenses would you literally have to get to recover right. the postage?
Yeah, there you go. Until so what percentage of that?
So let's come back with some more information.
Yeah, and metering rates, you know. Mm-hmm.
Bulk mail. One thing that would cost nothing is those boxes and boxes that you currently have that stuffed into other envelopes didn't do any good. On a rubber band on somebody's doorknob,
that's where I was thinking.
And that is something we could do that would require absolutely zip approval, no money. It would be just us. And try it in one zip code area so that we would know if it had results. Not try and spread ourselves too thin, but just really canvas one area.
Or I just give each of you a 100 and you just start walking. Yeah. You know, each night you go a different direction in your neighborhood.
And also businesses and
nice
things that do postings, like the, you know, we send our, you know, flyers and things will go to like the Fürstenberg and, you know, places that have flyers and things like that will... We send volunteers out to do those.
I was just going to say there might be a volunteer organization that might want to take this on.
Mm-hmm. Girl Scouts.
Boy Scouts, yep. Girl Scouts, mm-hmm. you know, something along those lines where it's a community service thing.
Does anybody want to look into the best way to use those flyers that we already have all printed then and that to get them out, either the canvassing or maybe we all of the above? I mean,
also the fair. I mean, the you use it for the summer for the...
Farmers market. Yeah, they definitely have to, definitely need to be at the farmers market because they'll get a lot of attention.
Why
there.
Couldn't we put a poster in places like PetSmart and veterinary hospitals that have a tear off on them?
I'm not opposed to that.
Picture of cats and dogs on there and what the money does, where it goes, and
probably just
supporting the Humane Society. Because Second Chance Companions, I think, I'm not sure the name, have a box for cat and dog food in all the veterinary hospitals and PetSmart, and I think they've collected quite a bit.
I think it would be nice if people could report. Like, I would fink out my neighbors so fast. Seriously. Well, because if I could report, I can give you their names. I can tell you how many cats they have. Mm-hmm.
Well, see, that's what made me come up with this, because if you have to come up with the money to hire the employee to do the canvassing and or calling first, we have to figure out a way to come up with enough money supporting another employee, and then...
Well,
you can figure them out all you want, and there would be somebody
to
go.
I just meant if you add on the Clark County Animal Control, it says, hey, if you see two...
If you want to rat out your neighbor.
You can report an unlicensed animal.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I personally adopted out a dozen cats from every year, and I missed just one. Just one cat, and I got a whole another herd the next year.
So we just got 33 cats today from a woman who... started with one cat 2 years ago.
You know,
inbreeding.
It's this family next door that, I mean, honestly, you could make a killing there if you just showed up and knocked on the door.
And I'm going to say that this leads beautifully into the community cats. Is that good?
What a segue.
All right, I'm going to watch the time so I don't... You need it.
That none.
Okay.
I don't think.
I'm going to do this fast.
Okay. So do we want to move closer?
So before I start this out, I gotta tell you, I have four cats I've adopted that were feral, so I don't hate cats. See, I don't do a lot of this. Okay, thank you. So, but I do think this is an important topic. So, as probably all of you know, maybe not you, but I'm Clark County's only wildlife rehabilitator. And, no, not you, the one next to you.
Oh, okay.
I also started a nonprofit 5 years ago called Squirrel Refuge. And I take in hundreds of animals a year. I have 40 volunteers. And, you know, they come to us because mom gets hit by a car or somebody does a housing thing. But the vast majority are from cats. And I euthanize these animals myself And cats do impact wildlife. There's no way around that. And as we kind of go through this, I want us to all remember that we hear what we want to hear. I hear what I want to hear, and you guys hear what you want to hear. And so we've got to try to stay and work together through this issue, because I know that euthanizing these cats is a failed system, and I don't support it. But I don't know that TNR necessarily is a better solution. And there may be some things that we can find some way to have TNR and mitigate some of these things. So let's take it with that attitude. But whatever we decide to do, it's going to affect a lot of things here. It's going to affect the lives of these cats. And when I said in my paper, you know, this really benefits the shelter, it does. It impacts the people that have to kill these cats. It impacts the public perception of these cats, or what the Humane Society does. And if you do release them, then it also kind of impacts the public's idea that, well, maybe I can just throw my cat out if I don't like it anymore. And it is a huge issue with wildlife, and it is an issue with public health. I mean, cats are a primary source for toxoplasmosis. I guess 1 in 4 people in the U.S. has this, and it's not a minor thing. So, and also there's some legal things I want to talk about. So I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. So we all know the claims of TNR, that it's an effective and humane approach, and it improves the lives of feral cats, it reduces conflicts with people, it's supposed to reduce impacts to wildlife, and decrease the colonies over time. All of these have to be looked at. So there's also a fair amount of opposition. The American Veterinary Association, or Medical Association, Fish and Wildlife, the Center for Disease Control, the Environmental Protection Agency, these are all major organizations that have stated outright, PETA, this is not the right thing to do. So there is a lot. And I took a lot of this out of my paper, and so if you want to go back and look at it to see the sources, you guys have to become really good at reading these studies. I was outraged when I went and looked at the studies. It'll say one thing, but the study doesn't say that. And we have to be good at reading studies. So, you know, if somebody says, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit, that there's evidence that something's true, just go look at the study. It's out there. The internet will show you anything you want to. So just briefly, how we ended up in this problem is that cats were domesticated thousands of years ago. There is no place in the world where they are native. The domestic cat has no native habitat. That's a problem, because, you know, most things that we can say, hey, you know what, you can go live here, and you're, that's where you live, right? The East Coast, that's where certain squirrels live. The West Coast, they don't live here, not welcome here, invasive. So anywhere you see cats outside, they're going to be considered an invasive predator or deleterious wildlife. So they're not going to ever be seen by any Department of Fish and Wildlife as a welcome addition to their habitat. So you'll see a push with the TNR programs to try to get them designated as protected wildlife. That is not the push you want to go with, because Fish and Wildlife doesn't mess around, and they will eradicate them. So that's just not the way to go. And there's a lot of laws that if they do get designated as wildlife, if you let them loose, then you're breaking federal laws that you just don't want to go that way. So but back to it. Today I found statistics on the low side of 20 million, on the high side of 150 million feral cats. Generally, 80 was the number I saw the most, 80 million feral cats. And that's roughly equal to the same number of owned cats. So if you think about all the people that have cats, the idea is that there's that many feral ones out there. The earliest statistic I could find was 2% of them were sterilized in 2004. That's 12 years ago, so that's really old. But that just tells you how few of these cats are sterilized. Now, the thing that's really interesting about cats in general is that their numbers are continuing to grow unchecked. They have not ever stabilized. And this is an important thing to understand when we talk a little bit about how nature works. And I know I'm really backing up, and I don't want to insult your intelligence or anything, but the cycle of nature is really simple. Lots of prey animals, then we get lots of predators. The predators eat all the prey animals. Predators decrease, they get to recover, And this goes around and around. When prey go up, predators go up. When prey go down, predators go down. This is not true for cats, though, because they're artificially supported in their environment. So cats have an entirely different situation. You know, kittens are born. We have lots of cats. They go out and they eat the prey. They go home and get some cat food. And then they breed, and we have the cycle. That's why cats continue to go up. There is no natural thing to put them in balance. Even the diseases, like, you know, when you look at something like smallpox, right? That pox virus is out there among almost every species out there. And that's a natural way that nature kind of controls itself. It has these diseases. But we've, you know, vaccinated our cats. Pardon?
Smallpox?
Well, smallpox for people. But there's squirrel pox. I'm just using that as an example of viruses that kind of exist in nature that will wipe out, you know, they're very deadly to, you know, birds have their pox virus. A very, very, yeah, right? And we got smallpox, took out a whole bunch of people. These are just natural ways in the environment. I'm not saying they're nice or they're good, but that's kind of how nature works, right? Things in nature don't generally die of old age unless you're an apex predator. You know, and so because we are supporting these and then we let them outside, they run around, they eat lots of birds and do things that, but that's what cats do. And they do that because they're naturally predatory. Cats don't kill necessarily because they're hungry. Cats will go out because they're just not getting that met by the kibble in their bowl. So what they found is that cats will go out and kill when they're not hungry. So there's really nothing in nature that's going to stop the problem that we're having today with feral cats. I mean, it's never happened at least. And this is an important thing to keep in mind as we kind of talk a little bit more in this, that I'm going to talk about these studies in a second, that one of the things on the TNR is the idea that you're going to hit some kind of level of equilibrium in a community of cats. And that can really occur maybe on an island where you've got some control, but you're not really seeing that equilibrium ever really happening with feral cats. So I went and I looked at some of the studies that really get talked about a lot. I went to Alley Cat Allies because they were a real big advocate on TNR. And so I actually looked at their studies. And I found it really made me mad. And it made me mad because the claim was that this campus study, and I think that's one of the studies that was in the demonstration that the TNR lady brought up, said that they had a 66% reduction in cats because of their TNR efforts over 11 years. So I looked at the study, and you guys can look at it too. And what they were including in that 66% reduction was that they had adopted out 47% of the cats. They euthanized 11, 6 were either killed by cars or just disappeared. And only 2% were actually TNR. So, yes, 66% reduction does sound really good. But most of this you would see with capture and remove. I'm not saying that that's the way to go, but this is no evidence that TNR is effective. This should not be something that they're going around. But you know, if somebody says it enough, and enough studies repeat the same study over and over, people will believe it. And it makes me mad because this is an example of somebody going out of their way to skew the perception of how effective TNR is. And anytime, you guys do it yourself. You see something, go look at the study. You go on the internet and you just put the name of the study out there and you'll find it and you can read it yourself. The other one that was on the Alley Cat Allies was the Rome study, where they said that there was a 32% decrease. So I looked up the study. And what they did was they only looked at the colonies where there actually was a reduction. They didn't take into account cats migrating in. And so what the study said, and I pulled this right out of the synopsis, was that 53% of the colonies declined, 47% increased or remained stable. But what was really interesting was at the end of the study, the authors of the study said, all these efforts without an effective education of people to control the reproduction of house cats as a prevention for abandonment are a waste of time or waste of money, time, and energy. That's what they said in their own study, and yet this was on LA Cats Allies as proof that TNR works. So all I'm asking is go out and look at the actual studies and find out for yourself if you're being sold a bill of goods.
But I think I can tell you why I don't think TNR necessarily works. Well, there's a couple things. So I went and I looked, because I know, because I deal with wildlife, that food left in a community attracts wildlife. And so one interesting study I looked at found that in a feral cat community, 74% of the food was being eaten by the skunks. And then the raccoons were eating well, and the foxes were eating well, and the feral cats were really only eating 4% of the food in this one particular colony. Now, I'm not saying every colony is like that, but when you put food out that wildlife can also come around, these are all rabies vector species, and they, all of them, this raccoon roundworm is a nasty little bit of business. These animals, when you bring them all together, really increase your probability for having a disease problem. It goes back and forth between the cats and the wildlife. So that's a pretty big issue. But the thing I brought this up was this idea that there's a vacuum effect. That if you take the cats out, then more cats will come in, that you're not really going to solve the problem. But this vacuum effect, it can't really exist. There's a couple reasons why it can't really exist, or it does exist, but it doesn't really matter whether you're removing the animals or you're TNRing the animals. Because if cats disappear, most of the food is being eaten by wildlife anyway. But let's say you take the whole wildlife thing out of it. When you look at, you guys are already going in and taking a whole bunch of these cats out and adopting them out. Or you're euthanizing the sick ones. Or some of them just disappear. There's natural attrition. There's going to be a vacuum effect in both cases. In both cases, a large number of cats are being removed. So one is not going to cause more of a vacuum effect than the other. So as an example of that, I looked at the case and I looked at, okay, so let's say we had 100 cats and we did a TNR and the other we trapped and removed. The same 47 would be adopted out, 11 would be euthanized, 6 disappeared. The only difference, the net difference at the end of it, is that you'd have 46 cats instead of 44 cats, because those two would have been neutered and returned. You still have a large number of cats here that have disappeared. So that vacuum effect is going to occur, whether you're TNR or whether you're trap and remove. I don't think it makes a compelling argument that that's not going to occur either way. And the other thing, and I know I'm talking really fast, is that people aren't stupid. So we have a lot of cats and we put lots of food out. If you guys show up and take away the cats, and this person says, wow, you know, my food's just sitting out, they're not going to keep putting more food out. They're going to put less food out. And this is why, another reason why cats keep growing is that the more cats show up, the more food we put out. I know because I do it. I hate to say it, but I do it. My neighbor has 12 cats that are hungry looking at me. I feed 12 cats. And after I get rid of those 12 cats, I don't feed 12 cats anymore. So I think that there's a lot of fallacy that somehow taking these cats out of the hole pool is going to affect or cause more cats. And then this is actually a picture, by the way, of raccoons that, I mean, I love this picture just because, you know, they get used to food being somewhere and they will show up and they will eat it. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I saw so many pictures out there, and I really tried to pick pictures that wouldn't offend because, you know, this is horrible. You know, you see all these animals, you know, hit by cars and stuff. But I found it really interesting, all the pictures of the cat at the bowl with the skunk at the bowl with the raccoon at the bowl. They don't seem to really mind. They all just kind of get used to each other. So what does work? And there's so many studies out there. Some say as little as 50% of the population has to be spayed and neutered for you to get it to stop it from growing. Others say up to 90% of the population. So that brings up the question here in Clark County, can we do that? Can we make a targeted effort here in Clark County to spay and neuter these cats fast enough to make an impact, to actually stop the colonies from growing? And like I said earlier, this does work on island populations where you can control the migration of cats in, but where you can't control that because of the large number of cats that aren't spayed or neutered, it's just not, unless you can make a targeted effort to stop that, you're not going to get ahead of it. Okay, sorry. Okay, so then back to the question, is TNR good or bad for wildlife? And the argument has been that there'll be less kittens, and I think I've kind of said why I don't think that this is actually a good argument. Because, rather you have cats that you're returning to the population or cats that you take away and that they never return, people are going to feed as many cats as show up. I mean, I know because I'm guilty of it. People will feed the cats that are there. And if the cats disappear, they're not going to keep putting food out. So the size of litters, this is all speculative. There's no evidence. There's just absolutely no evidence that TNR does anything for wildlife or reduces the number of feral cats out there. I could not find a single study, and I looked. But again, people see what they want to see. So if you guys find something, absolutely, I'd love to know. But right now, there's just no argument that or no evidence that that argument is valid. So this is interesting. So there's a couple studies that were done, and the TNR advocates will say that these numbers are highly inflated. I don't know. I don't know how they come to the conclusion. But currently, every year, it's thought that on the low end, 1.3 billion birds die, and 6.3 billion mammals die because of cats. Cats are the number one anthropomorphic reason that wildlife dies. Some people will make the argument, well, why are we picking on these cats? People are the biggest problem here, right? We're going in and we're taking out their habitats. But what they don't realize is cats are here because of people. This is not a separate problem. This is part of the problem with people being here. So, but these are pretty large numbers. And what you guys have to realize, and what we all have to realize, because I plan to participate in this too, is that when we save the life of one cat, we're trading that life for a lot of other little lives. We don't have to stand over and see it happen. But dying at the hands of a cat is not a pretty sight. I get in rabbits with half their fur gone, and I euthanize these as quickly as I can. But this is not a simple thing that we save a life and it's all said and done. We're responsible for the choices that we make. And so what we're saying is that, is this technically invasive predator, is its life more important than 10 rabbits, 5 squirrels? I mean, those aren't things that, I mean, I know how I feel, but those aren't things I can answer. I can answer that question, but we have to own the fact that when we remove a cat and we spay and neuter and put it back, we are killing other animals. So let's talk about rabies, and you're going to help me because I could not find any evidence that a single rabies shot would confer lifetime immunity. What I did find, because I had to look at the studies, because I did see a lot saying that that we really believe these vaccinations are good for at least 7 years. So I went and I read a lot of really technical stuff. I don't envy veterinarians at all. But the challenge studies that have been done on vaccinations up to 7 years are for some of these other viruses that are commonly found in cats. But they're currently doing a challenge study to try to see if rabies can go beyond 3 years. And if the life of a feral cat is 2 years, which is what a lot of people are saying, maybe that is lifetime immunity for that cat. But all of them say that you really need to have that initial shot and then a booster shot, and then they have that immunity for at least 3 years. If we decide, and I don't know because I'm not a vet, I'm not, but if we decide to go against the recommendations of the American Veterinary Association, Medical Association, and the CDC, and say these cats aren't going to get rabies after we put them all together with a bunch of other rabies vector species, that could be considered negligence. And that's just something to think about. In Washington State, we only have bats rabies in our bat population. We have about 0.5% of bats in Washington will be rabid. Of the bats that come in and are tested, 5 to 10% of those bats test positive for rabies. Well, those bats weren't grabbed out of the air flying by, okay? Those bats were down. And a cat cannot resist something down on the ground flapping around. So if you take 100 bats and they're flapping around 5 or 10 of them are going to have rabies. And if you're going to take a cat, and a lot of feral cats really don't have any, you know, they haven't had any shots. So some of them may have. I mean, some of these may be pets, but we really don't know. But if we're putting more cats out there and we absolutely don't know that they're going to pass on rabies, I think we're taking on quite a liability. So one of the interesting things is that when I did this research with the CDC, they're saying right now about 300 rabid cats are reported each year. That these are now the number one species for transmitting rabies in the United States are cats, are feral cats. And in Washington State, for the first time in I don't know how long, a cat was rabid last year. So it can happen, and we have to think about that. I'm not saying that we shouldn't necessarily take this approach, but we dang well have to figure out how we're going to revaccinate these cats and make sure they at least have those two, because we can't do that. And that's just wrong, because if a kid gets bit and dies because it's got, and it has that little ear tip, then every one of us is responsible for that. So it's just worth really thinking about how we're going to solve that problem. So I wanted to talk really quickly about the law, and I'm going to talk really quickly. So I looked up the law. Cats are designated as domestic pets. That's important to keep them safe. If they're not domestic pets, then they're going to be killed as wildlife. All 50 states have anti-cruelty laws. Cats are property. They're not, and that's just the way it is. And they're not wildlife, and as I mentioned, they're non-native and invasive predators. So as far as ownership goes, Washington State does not necessarily have a definition of ownership for a cat. However, I was able to find some legal definition for ownership within the United States itself, and really what it does is it comes down to who has that right of claim on or the right of possession of the animal. And I'm concerned that once an animal is caught by animal control and then it gets to the Humane Society, you own that cat. Because you can do anything you want with that cat. But we don't have laws around us. It never occurred to anyone that the Humane Society would let a cat go, right? You can adopt it out, you can euthanize it, you can transfer it, but we don't really have any thought the Humane Society is going to let it go. And the other thing about the rabies vaccination is that the law in Washington says that you have to vaccinate a cat every 3 years, except for the animal shelter. They have an exemption. They don't have to vaccinate these cats. So that kind of leaves us in kind of a weird position, because if we actually maintain ownership so that we're not abandoning the cat, then really not vaccinating it, That wasn't what the law was meant to do. We could do it legally, but it's ethically and morally not the right thing to do. And if we let it go, then it's abandonment if we don't have ownership of it. So either way, the whole rabies vaccination problem is we just don't have the laws out there. I guess that's where I'm trying to go. We don't have the laws out there to deal with this kind of issue. We certainly don't have them in Washington State. So when it comes to ownership, you guys can go look at the paper. I want to kind of jump through this really quickly, but there's just basically no guidance at all. But what they do is they come in and they say that it comes down to being possession of the animal. In most states, if you feed that animal and you take on responsibility of care of that animal, then you have ownership. And that'll become important here in just a second. A couple other really important legal definitions when I look at what Washington state law says, because state law will override the county law. So we have abandonment laws here in the county that we would have to change in order to do this, but we'd also have to deal with the state law. So I just really quickly, the definitions, we all kind of know what abandonment or negligence or knowingly or recklessly or imminent, all of these things become important when we actually look at Washington state law. Because Washington state law says that A, if we own that animal, we have an obligation to provide shelter, rest, sanitation space, medical attention, and make sure the animal doesn't suffer any unnecessary, unjustifiable physical pain. And we also can't just drop it off somewhere. Because if we do that and it suffers any bodily harm, or that we should have known that it was going to suffer bodily harm, then then we're breaking the laws in Washington. And this is just a gross misdemeanor, but still, you know, we would have to somehow look at how what we're doing, does this or does this not break this law? So that's just one issue. And then the second issue is that here in Clark County, we would have to change this up here to say, unless it's animal control or unless it's the Humane Society. Because right now, our county codes say that what we're proposing is abandonment. So if we are, and I'll just jump in real quickly, if we are going to keep them in a cat colony that's protected, we can get around the abandonment laws that way. But just taking a cat and dropping it off where it came from, unless you can get the homeowner to take some, or to say in writing that, yes, we will ensure that the cat's getting food, water, shelter, those things, I don't see how we can get around the abandonment law there at all. But you guys, we can all talk about that. So, as I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of organizations that don't support TNR, and this is primarily one of the reasons. And I just went on the internet and said, your tip cat. And, you know, these are just pictures of cats that, you know, once they come into the Humane Society and we stick them back out in a colony, you know, things out in the wild don't die of old age. That just doesn't happen. I see enough wildlife to tell you that. Most of these cats aren't going to live that long. Some of them do come in looking really good. But in nature, if you're sick, you're old, you're crippled in any way, you're dead. And that's what's going to happen to every cat that we put out there. They're not dying of old age. And we're fooling ourselves if we think they are.
That's nature.
That's nature. And nature is ugly. You know?
No, it's not. It's nature.
You know what? I've seen a lot of nature, and I'm going to tell you.
It's not ugly. It's nature.
You come visit me.
I will.
I see the birth defects of nature.
Dying of an abscess is really slow and painful.
I see suffering.
Humans die.
You know what, though?
We have oxycodone.
Yeah, you know what? Humans will do everything they possibly can to not face nature. Okay, we do all sorts of things. We don't say, I'm not going to go to the doctor. It's nature.
Euthanasia is killing animals, so...
Well, euthanasia is better.
I would rather do the presentation. We're out here, though.
Okay.
You're just being difficult.
Well, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm going to get this done here. But so anyway, this came out of the ASPCA's website, and they're all for TNR. And this is what they're saying. This is the life of a feral cat right here. It doesn't sound that good to me. You know, we have to own the fact that if we put these cats out there, we need to find a way to ensure that they're going to. That they're going to have a good quality of life. And I think there are ways to do it. But to just drop a cat off just because it looked healthy when you picked it up, unless somebody says they're going to take care of that animal, you don't know the first time that that cat goes to the bathroom in their flower bed that they're going to say, well, I'm not going to feed this cat anymore. So we do have a responsibility to these animals. Okay, so what I tried to do in a summary is that there are pros. You know, this is better for the people that have to deal with these cats on a day-to-day basis. Nobody wants to kill them. I don't want to do that. The cons is that it is environmentally non-defensible. You cannot let these cats back out there and think you're helping the environment at all. You're not. You're choosing who dies. That's the bottom line. That's truth. And if you want cats to be part of nature, just stop feeding them. You'll see how ugly nature gets. So there's pros and there's cons to it. We have to look at the health risk to the public, you know. So then I just really quickly made some recommendations because I'm not for killing a bunch of cats either. I really think we need to make a huge push to have all cats that are not breeding animals spayed or neutered. Now, the beauty of this is it's not going to pass because the public's going to stand and say, you can't tell me that I'm going to have to spay or neuter my cat. But you know what? Just think of the public. You guys will get so much free. People will go, you know, I should get my cat spayed or neutered. There's all these free programs out there, these low-cost programs. We need to make this push.
It's not unheard of.
If we can make this push, we can solve the problem right there.
And you have a lot more luck playing that with cats.
Seriously.
Just focus on the cats alone.
If we totally fail, though, it'll still come out good because people will, it'll be right there in front of the public and we won't have to pay a penny of it because every old biddy's going to be out there yelling that you can't make me spay my cat. So, and I didn't mean to offend the old biddy.
You
will
just
bring
you $250
for not. I know, seriously. This is good stuff. And the other thing is, I love the fact that Clark County works so hard to get the cat spayed and neutered and that we're actually succeeding at this. And, you know, I really like that, and I think we should continue that. I think it's great. I do think to avoid federal penalties, because I didn't go into a bunch of the federal laws around wildlife, we can't be releasing on public property. Any state property, state lands, wetlands, anything like that, we've got to avoid. And we should stay away from any forested areas with dense wildlife because that's where most of our native wildlife is. So we want to stay away from that. And then the other ones were, you know, if we can get people to agree in the feral cat colonies to say, yes, I will take care of this animal, then we're not going to be hitting the abandonment issues. And the other thing is I think that we really need to get a special license for cat colonies. Otherwise, you're just going to have hoarding without walls. Some people will just simply get a whole bunch of cats together. And so I think that we really do need to have some oversight over these colonies. You know, I'm just telling you what I think. This doesn't mean this is what it should be. And I do think that... we should look in. I mean, I think people will get together and help build these larger enclosures. I mean, where maybe we do take 15 cats and try to protect them a little bit so that we can get out and vaccinate and we can see. Because when a cat gets sick or injured by something, it takes off. We just don't see how it dies. We don't usually get to, you know, do anything more than, oh, hey, I haven't seen that cat in a while. So, I mean, I think something like this might... People, I think, will help volunteer, will donate supplies. It's just, it's a little more work, but you are protecting your wildlife this way. Okay, I think I've already gone over a few minutes, so that's it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know Australia's had a huge problem with feral cats. Do you know how they are dealing with it or have dealt with it? It's been a long time since I've heard anything.
I would have to go look. Unfortunately, I saw a lot where they just go and kill them.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of killings. Yeah.
There's a lot of killing. And I didn't show you the ugly pictures in here. If you go and you take a cat that somebody doesn't want there, a lot of people just think it's fun to do all sorts of things. I mean, I saw some pretty horrible things on the internet, and it was really disturbing, you know. So I think we want to avoid euthanasia by gun or, you know.
Gun would be quick and less painful. If you're a kid.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Anyway. You guys are, all I'm saying at the end of the day is go look at the studies. You're going to make your own decisions. There are people out there that said things, you know, a cat has every much as right to be alive as all the wildlife.
Oh.
You know what? Some people would agree with that and some people wouldn't agree with that.
Mm-hmm. What makes cats? You brought up a good point in your report about, you know, why we don't allow wild packs of dogs all over the place.
No, we don't.
Why would we allow cats?
And you know what? The same argument we're making. You can spay a python. We could go spay all those pythons in Florida. We could. But we somehow think a cat is different than a python. The pythons have decimated the Everglades.
I know.
You know?
They're
so, pardon? No,
they're
wild.
They're
not.
Species.
Yeah, they are in Florida.
They're
not native.
They were
they're
released.
Yeah, they're not native to Florida. They were brought in.
Yeah, they were released as pets.
Right.
Just like the
cats.
But
now they're wild.
Just like the cats.
Sort of the cat. Yeah.
But with the pythons, they are going out of their way to eradicate them.
So what we need is more effort put into having those same microchips broadcasting a warning. I mean, really, this sounds ridiculous, but the whole bell the cat thing, I would bell my cat, but my cat gets the collar off. I can't get my cat back in the house because it used to be a house cat. But something that helps with animals that are outside.
It won't
help.
Matter.
You can stitch a bell to his neck.
You know what? It won't matter. I know because I have cats. My cats get outside, and they bring home birds. You know, and I try to keep them in. It won't matter because most of the wildlife I get, 95% of them are babies, and those babies just sit there. Those little rabbits just sit there.
Yeah.
Cat walks up, tears their leg off, and then they come to me. And it's brutal. So
the only predator they have right now, the cats or the coyotes, because in my neighborhood, that's when the cats are missing. Yeah, it's usually unfortunate. Yeah. And I just say, you know what? Cat was outside. Coyote needs to eat. That's what happens.
I know.
Not your fault. It's not my fault. I'm not going to kill a coyote because of it.
Yeah,
exactly. A lot of people do kill coyotes.
And they should
because of it.
Maybe they were here first.
Well, this was a wonderful presentation.
You did an excellent
job. Thank you so much.
I didn't manage to tell you anything helpful here.
No, you did.
I think so.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, I didn't come up with a solution to say that, because I don't want to.
The solution, we wouldn't have to be here.
I know, but when I saw, I don't know if you looked at the last page of these garbage cans filled with dead cats. I mean, my heart broke at that. It really did. So I don't have the answer to that, but I do think it's important that this group, we have to own the decision we make, and there's no decision where something doesn't die here.
That's right.
Well, that's it. I'll let you guys go.
Great job, Jackie.
Thank you very much.
Lisa?
Yes?
When you talked about the committee, you sort of talked about that you've already made a decision to do a TNR program and that the committee's just going to figure out how to put it together.
Well, we have recommendations for a TNR program, but without changes to county code, I don't think the board is... I don't think the board is comfortable with moving forward with a sort of wide-scale, program.
Wait, your board?
Yeah.
So you've already made the decision that you want to support a TNR program?
Yes. We do want to support a TNR program to a certain extent. I think it's important to understand the scope of what we're talking about here is a couple of hundred cats a year. We're not talking, there's no way that we're going to be able to... get to the point where we're attacking, 50% or anywhere close to that. What we're talking about is the ability to do something different with a small number of cats that we get in every year.
And is part of your intent to have fed colonies, or is it just to return them where they were and put them back in that old situation?
Maybe part of the planning should be to figure out possibly who might be willing to develop and support some enclosed colonies.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's
because
all.
Because if you can find them after spaying and neutering them, the whole problem's solved. But you can't necessarily find them.
But somebody has to step in and do that.
Yeah.
Where do you think you're getting the funding?
Rich people on the board.
A variety of places. I mean, we already have a public spay-neuter program, and we do spay-neuter community cats already that people bring to us for that purpose, so we would likely funnel that through. It's also a matter of changing the way we the types of cats that come into us through our municipal contracts. So categorizing them as domestic cats or community cats, which would have two separate intake processes and protocols and potential outcomes.
Are you differentiating between community cats and feral cats?
No.
So, as we're already run a little bit over and we will be having these special committee meetings,
right, exactly,
can we defer this discussion to that?
Right.
Is there still a feral cat coalition in Clark County?
Not in Clark County.
There's
one
more.
Liz,
yeah.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
So we're adjourning.